Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmers.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks our title for today's episode.
Imago Relationship Coaching, an interview with Nick Solacek.
Yeah, we just finished that interview. He's a wonderful guy and just really interesting,
yeah, very
thoughtful.
Personable.
Yeah.
Very thoughtful.
Talks a lot about his own relationship and how he's learned from that and the ideas of Imago.
Right, and how it got him into Imago. And you were saying the ideas about Imago?
Well, yeah, and I was just going to note for folks who are listening who may or may not recognize that term, but you might know the name Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen Kelly, what's her name?
Hunt.
Yeah.
Hunt, right. And he'll talk about it.
And he'll mention it. Harville Hendricks.
If you want to know, stay tuned.
He wrote the book. Well, he's written a bunch of books. The one, Getting the Love You Want, is the kind of the the urtext on Imago Relationship Therapy. Been around for a long time. So before we get to that interview, let's plug our books. So you know what to run out and purchase immediately, even before you watch the interview. Just go and get.
Oh, it's not about communication. Why everything you know about couples therapy is wrong.
Which we did mention in the course of the interview. It sort of came up because here is Nick Solacek talking all about the communication techniques he teaches, and I think I was quite respectful of that. Because, in fact, I am respectful of that, in spite of having written a book, it's not about communication.
Right.
I really do. I think that's neat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
the book that started our podcast, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Indeed. And I'm putting in a plug in all of these podcasts we've been doing recently for the book that I'm still working on. I'm kind of in the middle of it right now. I'm just finishing chapter 5, but of course I haven't revised anything yet, so who knows? Who knows how long it'll take? But anyway, the working title is Betrayal, Forgiveness, and Faith. And I'm collecting stories of betrayal. So if you have had a betrayal in your life or you know some stories of betrayal that are meaningful to you, I would love to hear about it. You can drop me a line. You can get in touch with me and I'll be happy to set up a Zoom call with you. However you'd like to do it. But I am collecting those stories and I've already collected a bunch. People have been responding to this. And it's just been fascinating and you know, heartfelt. It's really difficult stuff, but it's the stuff of the work that I do.
And so you can go to our website, CTN7, and you can write to Bruce there, or you can, you can either email or you can follow us on social media and contact us that way.
CTN7.com, that's a .com. So let's go to our interview. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. No, we have to mention our sponsor. We can't forget our sponsor.
Right. The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get Laria upset because we didn't mention, you know, because after all, Laria is our sponsor.
That's right.
Tell people who Laria is, Judy.
Laria is my pseudonym.
Indeed.
My alter ego.
Yes, your alter ego, your wonderful alter ego. I like both of your egos, your regular one and your alter one. It's a wonderful book of erotica based on biblical stories, but deeply respectful and versed in the Bible.
Yes.
And also really hot.
So if you like the Bible.
If you can put those things together
in
your
mind. If you like
erotica,
even if you don't like the Bible, but you like erotica,
you'll like it.
It's a good read.
It's
and
a really
and
good.
It's available paperback, Kindle, and audio. And I do the audio.
And wonderfully so. So let's get to our interview, and we'll see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Nick Solacek. Nick is a certified Imago relationship coach, working with individuals and couples to help them improve their romantic relationships. His work emphasizes safe conversation techniques, mindfulness, authenticity, and boundary setting. He has also assisted the founders of Imago, Drs. Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt, in their online training for couples. Nick, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Hi, Bruce and Judy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. So we always like to start off with our guests just asking, how did you get into the work that you're doing? You know, tell us something about your own journey into this.
Yeah, well, I started out when I was much younger, in my late teens, being really curious about how to meet a good woman, you know? How do I meet the right partner? How do I approach them? And so I got really interested in dating, interested in psychology, interested in this, in my view, boy meets girl kind of thing. And I thought maybe, I'd be a dating coach or something like this. I had this idea that, I started really getting the hang of it, learning how to talk to people. And so my other friends were struggling. I'd always end up in conversations with them or with some of my female friends, counseling them about some of their relationship issues or giving them advice. Like as a young person, I just found myself in that role. I didn't do anything with that. I thought, who wants to hear from a young kid? I got no life experience, nothing to say. So I pursued a number of other interests, took a few long winding paths in different directions, and came back to personal development, psychology, spiritual work. Found a teacher in Vancouver through a certain set of circumstances, which had me come back to this thing around counseling or coaching or working with people. And it took a while for me to finally pull the trigger on that. The getting certified in Imago actually wasn't even my idea in the beginning. One of my colleagues said, "Hey, there's a few interesting trainings out there if you want to learn more about relationships." And as soon as I took level one, I was totally just grabbed by the theory and the tools, could see myself totally inside of, power struggle dynamics, some of the normal tricks that your ego plays in relationship. And it started making a profound difference for my partner and I. So I carried through that, through all the levels, supervision, and got certified. And so now today I'm working full time with couples and individuals on really a quality relationships, which is all about, relationship to self to a large degree.
So, for those of us who are not therapists, me included, Bruce is the couples therapist. I'm not a therapist. Can you explain to us what Imago relationship therapy is?
Yeah, well, it's a big answer to that question, and I think the most useful thing for people to understand is that there's a famous book that came out called "Getting the Love You Want,"
I read it
best.
probably 25 years ago, I think.
Yeah, and at the time, Harville, he was on Oprah some 17 times promoting his work, and many people are familiar with the book. But imago in itself, that term is Latin for image, and in the context of this relationship theory, that image is a composite image of your primary caretakers, the positive and negative aspects, their strengths and weaknesses, the things that you loved about them, and the things that maybe you didn't like. And the what this theory and Harville's research essentially comes to is that there's a pattern and a tendency to be attracted to people that match your imago. And when you find your imago match, there's some big growth opportunities that are part of that create all this chemistry and polarity, and there are a lot of things that can be really painful and hurtful. So it's a in the in the imago world, I think we think of it as a biopsychosocial quantum kind of theory. There's a lot of parts to it, but the main emphasis is that there's a purpose for that you're drawn to relationships for beyond just seeking love, and that's to complete and finalize aspects of your childhood.
Yeah. It's interesting you talk about, growth opportunities and also painful. And of course, those are often the same things. I forgot who gave us this acronym, AFGO. Have you heard that AFGO? Another
I
friend.
have. Yeah. I use that a lot. I don't know who came up with it. It's certainly popular in the imago world and larger therapy world. Yeah.
So how does Imago differ from other approaches?
Well, I'm currently being trained by Stan Tatkin in his PACT training, his psychobiological approach to couples therapy. And I can speak a little bit to both of those. Imago is working on this space between. So there is some of the conflict model of couples therapy where we're looking at conflict resolution, communication styles, certain techniques and strategies to work through things. But there's also this capacity piece, which is, can we actually be attuned to each other and be in the moment and practice being in the here and now to create more depth, more connection, more understanding. And Imago uses one of the primary tools is called dialogue, which is a fancy word for one person talks and one person listens. The trouble, as you guys know, is that sometimes the way that we our primitive brain wants to talk to each other is not always helpful or kind.
Talking at each other rather than to each other, actually.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, that too, yeah.
Yeah, so there's so much there. That'd be the primary kind of tool that people take away from that. They can actually use, like they can print out a worksheet, they can have something to practice. And if they do it right with certain guidelines, roles and responsibilities of sending and receiving, they are able to make more contact on issues that matter, maybe talk about some of the things that are radioactive, that usually have links and connections to childhood. And everybody gets something different from that. It's not a perfect tool for every single situation, you know, we can imagine, but it has worked really well for me, such that I'm, you know, kind of become a little bit of an Imago preacher, you know, in a way.
Yeah, it's when something works well, I can see why you would do that. You know, one of my favorite shticks, and I wrote about this in my book, which I titled, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong, you know. And of course, I include myself in that, why everything you know is couple therapy about couples therapy is wrong. Everything I know is wrong, too, which is kind of part of what I'm talking about. The notion that it's always fascinating to me as an old statistician, what you were just saying about when it works well, you can talk about radioactive subjects, you know? Well, yeah, when you can talk about radioactive subjects, it works well. In other words, if you're not freaking out, you can manage to do the technique. And if you are freaking out, you're not going to remember the technique.
Yeah.
And yet that's not, and I can be very, you know, snide about that. And yet, as you're pointing out, when it works well, it works wonderfully well. It's a really nice guideline for people for whom that works well.
Yeah.
And I can see for you, it's what was it for you that really just kind of grabbed you? If you can articulate it, what was it that grabbed you particularly about Imago, do you think?
Just in particular, how clear I got that I'm drawn to a partner who embodies positive and negative traits of my parents. That triggers me or annoys me or stresses me out. Or I don't like something in some way, or you're just like my mother.
Hear that.
yeah. So, you know, and noticing that, oh, wow, I really can show up like her mom and dad in certain ways. So just really getting that and seeing how that is at the core and beneath a lot of the frustrations or issues or little worries and anxieties that we have. I really got that fully and it landed with me, and some of the recommendations or the growth opportunities or just the feeling, the sense of connection that came through practicing dialogue about these things. Wow. Really created a lot of relief. Wow. Now we're feeling seen and heard and understood. And, oh, it's okay that I'm sometimes worried about this, and what's my desire, or what's my, you know, preferred outcome, or if I don't like to be talked in this way, too, in this way, what would be the positive thing I want, and how can I help create that? There was kind of a clear path or process there, which worked.
You know, as you're describing that, one of the things I noted was it really resonated for you in terms of your own experience. You also included your partner's experience in there. You know, in other words, it resonated in terms of, wait a minute, what am I triggering in her? You know, what am I triggering in my partner that, and you know, that I have a buzzword for that. I sometimes feel like I'm a bad Borscht Belt comic because I've been doing this so long. I have my catchphrases, you know. Well, one of my catchphrases is what I call the oh shit moment, which is the moment when you say, oh, no wonder you're feeling that way. And no wonder I'm feeling this way. It doesn't solve the problem, but it's this moment of you back away from contending at that point. You sort of, it's a moment of insight. Where you feel like, oh, I need to worry about not only my own worries, but I understand why you have yours too. And then you got a shot at actually hearing each other. I think that's when those techniques really will work well.
Yeah. You know, that oh shit moment is a really you know, sometimes not so wonderful, but empowering thing for me to experience. I especially love and appreciate when my partner is able to do that, partly because it's not something I experienced as a kid, like taking responsibility or ownership for things, repair, reconnect. And I try to always remember, hey, I'm not perfect, even though I'd like to think that I am. And I'm like everyone else to think that I am. That's kind of the mask that I like to wear. My partner can wear more the mask that she's the broken one or she has something to fix about herself. And we have to, you know, be careful about those stories. But when we're not perfect, we get it wrong, we make mistakes. One of the things that really creates a sense of ease and relief for me is that my partner or myself, depending on what's going on in the moment, can just say, hey, you know, wow, I really see how actually that would have hurt you. And you know what? I think I could have done this better, or what you deserved from me was. It's amazing how that ability to just lean in and attune to what the other person is experiencing, the ability to see and notice what's happening with you, how you might have co-created the moment. For us, it's really just created a lot of resilience and capacity to work through those speed bumps, navigate some of the rough waters of relationship, and try to stay the course. One of my mentors likes to frame it this way sometimes, which is, you know, instead of paddling our canoe forwards, we want to stop and hit each other over the head with our paddles. Why do we do that? You know, is that really the best way to handle this situation? But we got that tendency because human beings are kind of warlike in a certain way. Yeah.
Yeah. I always like to point out to people, you know, the vast, vast majority of folks I work with aren't crazy. And, you know, that's just a statement of faith. I start with that assumption. If people are feeling a certain way, they've got reasons. I'm not trying to say they can articulate them or that they're the only, you know, we're all a bundles of mixed feelings. And, IFS, internal family systems, you're familiar with that sort of stuff. Yeah. We've talked about that on the podcast before. That notion that we're all multiple people, I just love that. Or Jill Bolte Taylor's work, you know, she's the one who did My Stroke of Insight, that we're all at least four different people because we have these four different brain structures that are operating quite differently from each other, and yet they're all important. Yeah. I just love that notion that we're all a bunch of people. And so there's always good reason why this stuff is happening. And when you can appreciate that, that I think that's what lets people stand down from their fight or flight stance and not freak out. And then they can actually hear each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just I think that's a great framework also for just being connected to part of the reality of the situation. Learning IFS in particular, some of the meditations there that Richard even recorded with the audiobook are really incredible for practicing that, awareness and that connection and that relationship to those parts. I just did one the other day because something came up for me and I'm thinking, holy cow, I got something up right now. I'm not feeling like myself, I'm not feeling like my confident, clear, courageous self. And I think that that's important too, that people understand that even those in the healing profession are working on themselves, and it's a work is never done, and it's really this ongoing process of being with ourselves, holding and working through it with compassion.
Oh yeah, you're saying even those in the healing profession. I think especially those in the healing profession. You know, why did most of us get into this? Often it was from an experience of how powerful it can be, and that's because we've had stuff we've had to deal with ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. But I'm speaking to kind of this general projection, you know, you being on the inside, knowing what you know, having the experience that you've got, there's a lot of people that project that their therapist or coach or counselors maybe got it all figured out, which is part of their own I'm broken thing. And I'm the only one who struggles, or, you know, no one else has got it as bad as me. And it's hurts, you know, it's hard to hear that sometimes from people that they are in that place and believe that about themselves.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In your writings, you talk about the romantic relationship reset. What do you mean by that?
Well, I speak into the part of all of us that wants to hit a button, take a pill, you know, have the, $49.99 fast ab cardio workout system that will, get us ripped in 7 days or transform our life in a weekend. And Romantic Relationship Reset was a using some alliteration, kind of a catchy phrase to put together a program of ideas that I felt really made the biggest difference for my partner and I. I wanted to put some teachings together in an online program that people could access, that they could self-study from home. And that's obviously a big opportunity for people these days. Most people have a course and they're teaching online. And it's been a great way for people also to work in private, those who maybe wanted to individually do something without working with me one-on-one, or they want to do something in private with their partner because maybe for wherever they're at, therapy was too vulnerable or too expensive. And it was a incredible effort. I had no idea how much work it would require to put that together in the way that I want. But I'm really happy with the outcome and got some good feedback. So the Romantic Relationship Reset essentially is a 6-week program that helps couples really move through some of the challenges that they're facing in the power struggle, some of the classic psychological roadblocks that we come up against, and teaches them how to dialogue, teaches them about some of the things that matter the most. And in my belief, focus on specific things that can make changes quickly. I think transformation takes time. I think sometimes it takes years to change certain things, one pattern at a time. We change pretty slowly.
So how does it?
Francis, how does it do that? So one of the tools that I teach in there is something I created actually in my clinical training with Imago called the Wheel of Relationship. And Harville has famously said that there's two things that couples need: safety and aliveness. And if they can create those things in their partnership, then they will likely experience a high degree of satisfaction. They might even feel like they thrive.
You know, you remind me, it's interesting. Now I'm wondering, did I steal my favorite one of my favorite ideas from Harvard? Well, I certainly borrowed because I borrowed from everybody, you know. But my favorite shtick is to tell, and I always do this in the first session with couples, is to talk about the needs we're trying to fulfill are stability and intimacy, which maps very nicely onto, safety and aliveness. Safety meaning stability and aliveness meaning intimacy. I pretty much mean the same thing by those things. I'm sure I must have absorbed some of those ideas from him, as well as the other folks, the Bowen folks, talk a lot about tolerating anxiety for intimacy. But I don't know. So
Carry on.
yeah, carry on.
Yeah, well, it's interesting how all the work over the decades kind of flows into one another, and certain writers and thinkers are influenced by, particular researchers, etc. So in this case, I started thinking, what is safety? What is aliveness? How can I have more of that? It makes sense that I want it. I can feel, yeah, that would be good. Good for me to feel safe. Good to feel alive, feel connected, feel, passion. So I put together essentially a like coaches use a wheel of life, and they have people evaluate their categories from finances to health to fitness, friends, family, etc. And I created 5 pillars for safety and 5 pillars for aliveness. And I created a tool for couples to self-evaluate their relationship and to take a look at, hey, if I understand these terms, if I understand these definitions at a kind of a high level, where do I think that we're at? Just out of 10, So under safety, one of the pieces there is integrity. And that's actions matching words. I'm going to do my best to not commit to things that I can't follow through on. If I say I'm going to do something, I do my best to follow through on that. Consistency, truthfulness, these are all part of this safety thing. So we don't want Jekyll and Hyde patterns. Couples will do very well over time if they're able to be honest with each other, work together. They have the same information, especially as parents, they can work together as a team. So couples can go through this and evaluate where they're at and then ask themselves, hey, if I'm not at a 10, which nobody ever is because nothing's ever perfect, what's in the way? What might be preventing me from getting there? What would it look like if this was a 9 or a 10 out of 10 if it was a perfect thing? What's the dream? You know, can we wave the magic wand and get creative to talk more about, oh, how could we have more integrity? Where do I feel like I'm not being truthful? And that's a really powerful conversation for couples to have. So what I've noticed is that they start to generate quick results from just something like that, which is 1 week of the program. So there's so much that's part of that the course, but that'd be one of the things that I'm really proud of, partly because I spontaneously came up with that idea in the training. And I teach a dialogue in there, which Harville and Helen developed. And that's a that comes with a few actual scripts that couples can use and practice at home as well.
Wow. Yeah. And when you are working with folks yourself, like doing either couples work or individual work, I guess I'm especially interested in couples work. And this is a very broad question, but how do you do that? In other words, what's it like when people meet you? What do you focus on? How do you proceed with folks?
Yeah, my approach is to actually let them lead. Once they learn a little bit about dialogue, I try to, you know, put them together, turn them towards each other, making eye contact, because that's really where the whole relationship is, just right there in that space between them. And every couple's at a different place in terms of what they're ready or willing to talk about. So that sense of honoring their capacity as a couple is really important, that there's a sense of safety as we're moving forward and navigating different conversations. And as I'm teaching them about dialogue, there's just a goal there to keep that train on the tracks. And the way that I think about this, simply because this is kind of Harville's theory, is that if I was a doctor and I was putting casts on people who came in every day, you know, breaking their wrist or cracking a bone, I'd be treating that. But as a couples therapist, I'm treating this space between and getting curious about, oh, well, I noticed that, you know, maybe this person didn't put that in, or they said this, or how do you feel about that? And getting the couple engaged to talk about some of the subtleties and nuances without putting too much pressure on them at the same time. Need a little bit of stress. So always trying to be attuned to them as a unit in that way, and learn more about what's important to them. You know, what's really going on here? It's kind of like an investigation. And one of the things I'm learning from Stan is that sometimes the things that, you know, couples say are not always factual or true. And
and their perception.
Usually there's some kind of truth happening, but yes, they often have very different truths going on. You know, I'm realizing, I'm assuming something which I'm sure isn't completely true, but it's my gut feeling, if somebody said to me, gee, what would somebody go to an Imago relationship coach for? And just having read Harville's book, you know, Getting the Love You Want, I would be imagining it would be folks who want to get the love they want. You know what I mean? It would be folks who are saying, we're just not connecting the way we'd like to. I'm guessing you are less likely to encounter folks who are saying somebody had an affair, or folks who are saying, I just had a couple this week, which is, this is not infrequent, where one wants to have a child and the other doesn't, and they love each other and they're trying to figure this out, but it's a potential deal breaker. I don't know. It my prejudice on that may be inaccurate, as most prejudices are, but I'm curious, what do folks come to see you about, and what do you think they don't come to see you about?
Yeah, well, most people are coming to work with me after spending some time in the therapy world. Mm-hmm. So basically everyone that comes to see me has seen a therapist or counselor before. Not because I set that as a prerequisite. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be the trend. Mm-hmm. The other thing I notice is that I'm working with a lot of entrepreneurs, and that might be because of my presence on social media, or that they've come in through a certain way. But entrepreneurs are typically growth-minded. They've stepped out of working a 9-to-5 job, maybe in corporate America, to do their own thing. And in order to make that work, you got to be a little bit open, be growth minded, because it's hard, it's challenging. And what that sets up for couples a little bit is just this failed attempt, like previous failed attempts at therapy or counseling. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that they're usually coming in with. They're, you know, experiencing some of the breakdowns in their communication, some of the other pieces there that they're missing. They don't realize how much of a role their child is playing in their adult relationship. And I do have couples that come in with different situations. These days I'm trying not to use words like emotional affair or actual affair or cheating, and just frame it as they're coming in with this issue that energy is going somewhere that one partner doesn't want it to go. And that could be at women on social media, it could be at pornography, it could be about anything. And couples come in with a range of issues, but one thing I notice is that they have experience with therapy, counseling, they've done some personal development, and they're hoping that I can help them more, take them deeper to a new place, create more of a change. And so far, so good.
Interesting.
Wow. Well, are there other things that you want to talk about that we haven't asked you?
Well, we talked, I'm sure, for hours. I actually feel just, I don't know what the right way to label this is, but appreciate you guys having me on the show. And I think you, as a couple, doing this, having this conversation, is a really hopeful thing for our culture and for society. Francis Weller, author and therapist, he frames sometimes that, our relationships are not for us, they're for the community, they're for the good of the tribe in a way. And I just feel that just speaking to you guys, and just like, oh, okay, here's this couple with life experience, and they're talking about, in my view, things that matter, talking about relationships. And I know so many people, whether they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, that are more in the coping phase, not talking about things directly, and struggling. And so I just think it's wonderful that you guys are doing what you do. I wonder, in your guys' view, if there's a couple things, and I haven't read Bruce's books, that you feel, hey, these things work really well for us, or here's like one thing, if I could, tell everybody, hey, remember this in your relationship, or something to that effect, if you guys have anything that.
We have a catchphrase that we've often noted,
The
but of course,
forward
the
catchphrase, that
forward
one.
catchphrases, which of course, which doesn't help a lot of people. It's funny as a therapist to use this catchphrase. Go ahead.
Choose the right partner.
I mean, which is kind of like, well, gee, that doesn't help somebody who's a couple who's coming to me, having chosen each other and having all sorts of problems. I always tell people, or often tell people, my bias. I do have a bias toward helping people stay together. It's not like I insist that, not for me to insist that, obviously. Plenty of couples I work with end up splitting up, and it sure seems like that's the best thing for them. So it's not like I think that's a terrible idea. But often it does seem to boil down to that in some ways. What has worked, we're a second marriage. We've been together for 20 years, but we're a second marriage. And in each of our cases, we so greatly appreciate each other because we've been in relationships that, for one reason or another, saying nothing bad about our exes, but for one reason or another, didn't work out. So to be in one that works well, it not only works well, but then you get the extra life experience thing of appreciation. It's like, oh my God, I don't take that for granted because I've experienced a marriage that didn't work so well.
But I also like what you brought up a few minutes ago about working within the community or within the tribe, because I think a lot of couples feel very isolated and don't see the bigger picture and where they fit in to a community. And I think that puts a lot of stresses on couples too.
And then just also struggling in silence or alone, and we don't know what the neighbors or our friends are going through. We just, feel our shame privately. And there's some illusion, about what it's like to be in a relationship, or, what's normal.
I hear that a lot. I mean, folks saying, "Oh, everybody else seems fine," and I say, "No, they're my next clients."
Their social media life, and then there's real life.
That notion that it's about the community, that also fits very well with how I've often thought about this work. To me, it feels it's not merely a job, it's a calling. There's an element of this that feels like it's sacred work. That it's about healing. When you heal a relationship in whatever way, even sometimes I think of healing a relationship when they do split up, not when they don't. But either way, it's healing the community, it's healing the world to do that. There's a Jewish concept, we're actively Jewish, and there's a Jewish concept called tikkun olam, which means repairing the world. It's often I often rant about how it's misused, but never mind.
Anyway,
But
that's the easy better definition.
That's the easy definition. And it is a lot about that notion that in everything we do, part of what we do is I think we're called upon to make the world better. And, for a couple to work on their relationship, it's not just for them. It's for them and all of the concentric circles around them that they're the center.
It's beautiful. Do you feel that there are some key things or, patterns there when people pick wrong? So, if they choose the right partner, where do people go wrong with that?
That's why our little catchphrase is sort of funny, because I don't have a good answer for that. I don't, do you?
Well, from what I hear, and like I said, I'm not the therapist here, so I'm only going by what I hear from, well, probably my kids' friends, is I think that there's a lot of emphasis now with people hooking up, and they have sex first. And then they try to make this relationship work around it before they even know the person, really. They go out, they have, they meet, they go out, they have a great time, then they hop in bed, they have sex, and then after a few weeks, they start seeing the little things that are wrong, and it's like, oh, but we want to make this work. We want, and you stay together because you have this sexual connection, as opposed to let's get to know each other first, and then we can, do the sex part and be able to communicate, where they haven't learned to communicate with each other except on a sexual level. So, yeah, we have a lot in common, but is that really the right person for me? And I think sex just throws everything a little bit off kilter.
There's research on that, I think, especially for women, that it can be so misleading. For men too, but apparently, I remember reading this a while ago, that especially for women, that to be really sexually turned on by a guy can be misleading at first because you miss all the red flags. It's not that it's a bad thing, of course. That's it's lovely when you have them both, when you have both values in common and sort of lifestyle issues in common, and also then the sense of sexual passion. It's really
Yeah,
wonderful.
but if that's the basis of your relationship, it's not going to survive the 20, 30, 40 years that you might want out of a relationship.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I see the same thing with my adult friends, which is that they can be just focused on physical chemistry, then they're having sex and now they're attached, and that's kind of a sticky system. Let's get attached to somebody, and then can play out months or sometimes years, maybe often years, of this maybe unhealthy patterns and this mismatch, and there's these all these compromises about their values and what they want because they didn't discuss it in the beginning. One of the biggest things that is an issue sometimes is like kids. It's like, oh, do you want to start a family? Do you want kids? And in one of Alison Armstrong's workshops, she's addressing this with the crowd, and people are saying, well, I want to start a family. I'm in my early 40s. I don't want to waste time. When's the best time to talk about having kids? Should I fourth date, fifth date? And she's saying, right away. Like, tell
First
them
date.
who you are. Like, tell them what you want. They get
Before
sort through the marketplace.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how much hesitancy we have over that. And I think it's Gabor Mate that often says that, I get this attachment over authenticity. And so inside of early relationships or long-term relationships, we're choosing that, okay, I don't want to break this attachment. I don't want to upset them. I don't want to lose love. I don't want to be rejected. And then I sacrifice my authenticity in order to,
Yeah. It's one of my
prevent.
favorite things to point out. One of the chief skills of intimacy is the willingness to displease your partner. Not because you're being a jerk and you want to, but because you may have to, simply by just being able to say something that's important to you that may raise their anxiety and your own. You have to be willing to do that. And if you're not, it's not going to work. You're going to have to either suppress yourself and then blow up, or sort of die slowly, and it doesn't work.
I'm one of those people that my tendency is in imago terms to minimize. So, it's a turtle in the shell and withhold my thoughts and feelings and behaviors, just work it through in my own mind, don't ask for support, avoid drawing attention to any of the issues. Or draw any attention to myself and just kind of, quietly turtle my way through time. And my partner, she's the maximizer. She wants to talk about everything, expand the energy of the situation. She's big feelings, quick to cry. And we've done a lot of work on that. to be more connected to ourselves and not so driven by our parts or our fears, and to tell the truth about who we are. I think we'll be working on that for a lifetime.
It is. We are all works in progress. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to meet you both.
So nice to meet you.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Nick and learned about Imago relationships, techniques.
Indeed.
I don't even know what to call it.
Coaching.
Coaching. Thank you.
And excuse me. Yes, indeed. And I learned a lot talking with Nick. And
yeah.
I hope you enjoyed that.
Thoughtful young man.
A thoughtful young man. It's funny, when we're talking about, you mentioned things you've learned from your kids' friends.
Right.
And then he said, well, he's learned these things from his adult friends.
Right.
And I didn't bother throwing in, no, your adult friends are the same age as our kids'
our
friends.
Kids.
Whatever, that's fine. You know, it's nice of him to think that when you're talking about your kids' friends, you must be talking about teenagers or something.
Right.
Because you look young, what can I say? I probably wouldn't think that of me. But anyway, there we are. So let's just briefly mention, we got books. I'm looking for stories about betrayal. We've got Laurie's book.
And we have merch.
And we got merch as well, which you can find at our website, ctn7.com. And so until next time.
Remember, be kind.
Don't panic.
And have faith.